All right, we're going to hear the Mishnah on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph. Yotzei Dofen V'Aba Acharav. If you have a C-section, and then the Bechor, quote-unquote, that comes after that, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Shnehem Yir'u Achi Stavu. Both of them have to go out, graze until they get a mum in them. V'Yachlu B'Muman Ad Ba'alim. And then they're eaten once they get a mum to the Ba'alim, because obviously they're not going to the Kohen. The Kohen is Motzi Mechavero Olav Araya. Now, what the safek that Rabbi Tarfon is dealing with is one of two possibilities. Either there's a possibility that both of these are classified as a bechor. That means the one that came out through the C-section is a bechor, because it's the firstborn. And the second one that came out is also a firstborn, because it went through the birth canal. So it's a bechor from a different perspective. The Gemara is going to give such an explanation, which is bechor ledavar echad. If you are a bechor for one item, maybe that suffices to make you into a bechor that is kadosh. In that case, you could entertain the possibility that both of them are bechorim. One is a bechor because it was the first of the children, and the other one is the first that goes through the birth canal, the first bet derechem. And therefore, the safek exists that both of them could be bechorim. Or you could explain that Rabbi Tarfon is uncertain as to what is the governing factor for what is a bechor. Is it the first child that is born, or is it the pet derechem? And that is the safek. So one of the two are a bechor over here. So either one of those could be the safek of Rabbi Tarfon. In either case, you're going to end up with the same result, which is shtehem yiruach yistavu. Both of them have to be put out to graze until they get a mum in them. And then the baalim can keep them, because again, a motzi mechavero alav haraya. Rekiva omer, shnehem einan bechor. Neither of these are bechorim. Harishon ipnei she'enu peterechem. The first one, because it fails on the factor that it's not the first one through the birth canal. V'sheni mishnibnei she'kadamo acher. And the second one, who is the first through the peterechem, but it's not the first of the children. So for Rabbi Akiva, you need both qualifications in order to be the bechor. One is not sufficient in order to make you into the bechor. B'maika miflige. What are they arguing about? Rabbi Tarfon, Misapkale bechor ledavar achad, ihavi bechor, ilo avi bechor. Rabbi Tarfon is uncertain as to whether when you are a bechor ledavar achad, if you are a bechor, or are you not a bechor. Meaning that the bechor ledavar achad, is that a bechor at all? Or is it not a bechor at all? But even given that the safek is whether bechor ledavar achad is a bechor or not, then you still have the question, which isn't clear in Rabbi Tarfon's position, as to whether then both of them would be kadosh. Only one of the two would be kadosh. Meaning that is it safek that devar achad and each devar achad would be sufficient? Or is it one of these two would be the bechor in such a situation, unlike Rabbi Akiva's opinion, which neither of them are a bechor? If he was certain that bechor the devar achad was a bechor, just we're not certain what the devar achad is, then in an instance where you had one of each, by definition, mimonoshach, one of them should belong to the Kohen. And then you go back to the previous Mishnah as to how to divide it up. Is it split? Does the Kohen get the advantage? Do the Baalim have the advantage? We had all those different opinions in the previous Mishnah. The fact that he says the Baalim keep both of them means that he is b'safek b'gamrei, whether b'chor the Dvar Echad works or doesn't work. And therefore, there's a possibility that these are b'chorim, or there's a possibility that these are nothing. Now, it could be, again, that both of them are bechorim, because if you believe bechor the dvar achad is a bechor, it's possible that both of them are a bechor, but there's an equal possibility that neither of them are bechorim, and that's why it stays with the baalim. So there, again, it's not a safek as to what the dvar achad is, but it's a fake as to whether dvar achad is meaningful at all. Rabbi Akiva, pshitale, for Rabbi Akiva, it's pretty straightforward, bechor the dvar achad, lo havi bechor. He says that having one character trait that makes you a bechor is clearly not a bechor. You need to be both in order to be a bechor. And therefore over here, there's no safek. These aren't bechorim. You need to have both. If you don't have both, then you're not a bechor. Tarabanan, miklal atzarich liprat, uprat atzarich liklal. Just before we get into this, it's very confusing, very difficult. And that is that these are the shloshesrei midot, shatoran nidreshet bam. We have a principle called a klal uprat, and a prat uklal. Those are pretty straightforward, which is that if you have a klal uprat, which you have a generic term, and then a prat, a detail afterwards, that we say that the prat is magdir the klal, which means that the prat defines that which is in the klal, limits the scope of the klal, and the prat defines the klal. That's very straightforward. That's what the klal prat is. The other way around, a prat uchlau is when you have a detail, and then you have a generic statement afterwards. You have a list of behemot, and then it says the chol behemah. So in that case, that's a prat uchlau. In a prat uchlau, the klal is mosif al ha-prat, so that the klal adds on to what which is in the pratim that are there. Those are pretty straightforward. There seems to be another lashon, or another principle, which is what's being mentioned here in the Braita, which is a klal hatzarich leprat. A klal that is not defined by the prat, but needs the prat. Or a prat that needs the klal. Rashi here will try to draw a distinction between them and says that they are different forms of limud. And that's what the Braita is explaining over here, is these alternative forms of limud. Just for the other perspective on the other end of the spectrum is the Rabbeinu Tam, who says there's no difference. There's no difference between a klal prat and a klal tzarich prat. They're the same thing. That's just one limud. It's the same type of limud, and there's no distinction at all. Aside from that, you have a scope of Rishonim that land in the middle. We'll explain with Rashi first, and then we'll come back and describe the other Rishonim. Rashi over here says that the Braita we're about to bring has three sections to it. In the first section, it's not addressing the koteret, the header that we just had, which was klal tzarich leprat, prat tzarich leklal. The first section of the Braita is not addressing that at all. There's a second and third section of the Braita. They are addressing the two things that were mentioned in the header, which is klal tzarich leprat, uprat tzarich leklal. And that is, ketzad, how do I see this? Or where is there a manifestation of this? Kadesh li kol b'chor, yachil afilu nikheva. When it says kol b'chor, the term kol b'chor would imply any firstborn, whether male, female, any type of firstborn that you're speaking about. So all of that is b'mashmo. All that's included or subsumed in the term b'chor. Talmud lomar, zachar. Then the Torah comes along and tells you zachar. It's a limitation on the definition of b'chor. Now, the problem partly is that the word zachar does not appear in Shmot Yud Gimel by Kadesh Liko b'chor. It actually appears much later on in the Chumash, in Sefer Dvarim, in Perek Tedvav, where it speaks about b'chor. So there it mentions the word zachar. So that does present a problem. That's one of the points of evidence of some of the Rishonim that disagree with Rashi, which is that, in general, you can only have a klal uprat when the klal uprat are adjacent to each other. You can't have a klal uprat where the klal is found in Shmot Yud Gimel, Kadesh Likol B'chor, Petakol Rechem, B'nei Sel, B'adam, B'nei Malihu. And then in Dvarim, Tedvav, you have Kol B'chor, Asher Yivalei B'b'charcha, B'tzoncha, Zachar, Tatish L'Hashem Elokecha. So that leads to some consternation amongst the Rishonim, and makes some of them actually indicate that there are actually two different limudim that are going on over here. That is that there's a limud from the pasuk in Devarim, which is kol ha-bechor, she-vilei b'bechor v'katoncha ha-zachar. That's bechor and zachar. And then, also in the psukim that we find in Shmot Yud-Gimel, kadesh li kol bechor v'kol b'retim rechum nisubah dam ha-vein hu, and then it says ha-zacharim la-shem in pasuk Yud-Bet. So they think that maybe that's the quote that should have been brought over here. Again, it makes it more complicated, but that is a view of some of the other Rishonim over here, because of this problem of separating it. But for Rashi, we're dealing now with a klal uprat, classic klal uprat. You have here a klal that would have subsumed within it many different items. All of a sudden you have a prat that comes and defines the character of the klal. It limits the scope. It gives definition to the klal. Klal is b'chor. Zachar comes and tells you it's only relevant by Zachar. So that is your classic klal uprat, nothing to do with the koteret. Now, Izachar, yochol afilu yatzdan nikeva lefanav. I would thought, okay, it's the male that is the firstborn. That means that the first male born would be the bechor, irrespective of whether there was a female that came before him. It doesn't have to be the first child. It needs to be the first of the male children. And those are equally valid explanations of the word zachar. And this is how Rashi differentiates between a klal uprat and a klal atzarich leprat. A klal uprat is the klal would have included everything. The prat comes now and narrows the scope or defines the bechor, something that you wouldn't have known otherwise. The klal atzarich leprat is a situation not in which it defines the klal, But rather, the klal offers you two opportunities or two ways to explain it. And then the prat comes along and tells you which of those two explanations is correct. Or in other words, in a klal uprat, the klal would have included everything. There's no reason to believe that the scope of the klal is limited anyway. The prat comes along and gives definition to the scope of the klal. Another end with the klal, tzarich the prat, is the fact that this klal could be understood in more than one way. It has two possibilities. We're uncertain as to which of those possibilities is correct. Along comes the prat to define that for us and says it's a klal, a tzarich the prat. The prat is necessary in order to tell us what is the proper explanation over here. So in the first case, a klal uprat, the prat is defining the klal, even though it's not necessary. In the second place, the prat is explaining the klal, and it is necessary, and that's the difference between those two types of limudim. So he does bring an example where the Gemara explicitly says this by Kisui Adam in Chulin. The Gemara says there are two possibilities of explaining what the word Kisui means. To cover can mean to take a kli and cover something. To cover can mean take dirt and place it over the item. I don't know which of those two is demanded when it says v'chisau. So then it says v'chisau be'afar. The afar tells me which of the two kisuyim I'm trying to give or explain over here. Both of them were equally good explanations and possible definitions of the word v'chisau. But then the Torah comes and tells me which of those two definitions is correct. It's explained to me which of the two is correct. That's called a klal, hatzarich liprat. So in a klal uprat, the prat defines the klal. In the klal hatzarich liprat, the prat explains the klal. And similarly over here, when you say that the zachar is the firstborn, there are two equal explanations. The zachar being firstborn mean zachar, the first of the male that are born. That means that even if there were females before, it would make no difference. It's the first male born. Or when we say first male born, we mean first and male. It has to have both of those in order to be the Bechor. Both of those are equally plausible explanations for the word Bechor Zachar. So then, when I have a Prat that comes and defines it for me, that's a Klal, a Tzarich, Le Prat. The Prat tells me which of the two explanations is the right explanation over here. And that's what it says here. Yafilu, Yafilu, Yatzteine, Kevala, Fanav, Tamalomar, Peter Rechem. So the addition of the word Peter Rechem now tells me that of those two definitions, the only one that's right is that it's got to be both the Petarechem and Zachar. It means the firstborn male who is the firstborn of all the children, not just the firstborn male of the male children. That's an example of Klal HaTzarich LePrat. E Petarechem, now we go the other way. This is the example of a Prat HaTzarich LeKlal. The Prat that needs the Klal to help define it, which is E Petarechem Yechol Afilu Yatza Achar Yotzei Dofen. Then there's a possibility that if it came after a C-section, it still would be called a Petarechem. So once again over here, you have a Prat. Petarechem is a Prat. It's telling you which of the previous examples was the right way to define Bechor Zachar. And that was Petarechem. Petarechem is a narrow scope. But even within that narrow scope, you have two possibilities of explaining Petarechem. Petarechem could be the firstborn through the birth canal, or it could be the firstborn that also went through the birth canal. Those are both valid explanations of that prat. The meaning between them is, if you had a C-section before it, is it still called Petarechem? It's the first through the birth canal, so maybe it's Petarechem. But it's not the first child that is born, so maybe it's not Petarechem. Tamad Lomar, Bechor. That's what the word Bechor comes to teach you. That's a klal that comes to teach you that it's got to be a Bechor. Now, Bechor over here obviously can't mean Petarechem. It has to mean the first, and not just the first of the Petarechem, it means the first overall. And so the word Bechor, which is a klal, now is helping explain to us what the meaning of Petarechem is. Petarechem had two options to be explained. Bechor comes and tells us which of those two options to take. And therefore it's called a prat, hatzarich, lechlal. And that's how Rashi explains the Braita. According to Rashi, again, there's three sections to the Braita. The first section is a klal uprat, your classic kind of klal uprat. The second section of the Braita is a klal shitzarich liprat, where it's helping for explanation. And then the third case is a prat, hatzarich liklal. That's how Rashi reads the Braita. The Bali Tosafot here quote the entire Rashi. It's interesting. They quote it even in more detail than Rashi himself. They quote the entire Rashi, and then raises some of the issues associated with Rashi's explanation. And their evidence against Rashi is the fact that a klal uprat has to be adjacent to each other, versus a case of a klal shetzarich uprat that can even be meruchakim, can even be far apart from each other. And therefore, it's hard to understand how the first section of the Braita is a case of klal uprat and not a case of klal hatzarich uprat. So that question could be solved by the fact that he used the word zecharim in Shmot Yud Gimel rather than the zachar in Sefer Dvarim, because then that would bring them more adjacent to each other. They're still not very adjacent to each other, but they're in the same perek at least, and therefore it could still be called a klal uprat rather than a klal hatzarich uprat. That would be answering on behalf of Rashi. And one of his main issues is the fact that Rashi's explanation really only works according to Ravina, who says in a second that Bechor LeDavar Echad is called a Bechor. And because of that, the whole problem arises. But according to Abaye, who says Bechor LeDavar Echad is not considered a Bechor, then the broader term Bechor should have covered us in all these cases, because Bechor, by definition, means a Bechor in all aspects. Tosva then goes on to explain why maybe even according to Abaye, the necessity for the Braita exists, that maybe the fact that Bechor for everything doesn't mean everything literally. It just means enough things, not just one item, but two or three items would be enough. And therefore, you need the Braita to define what are those factors that really matter. Or, the Ri suggests over here, that according to Abaye, Bechor Beterechem Tavayu Klal V'Tavayu Prat. Beterechem and Bechor are both a Klal U'Prat. Each one of them is a Klal, and each one of them is a Prat. And they are mutually beneficial to each other and help each other out. And each one of them is a prat that is tzarich leklal, and a klal that's tzarich leprat. Shekol echad sotem davar echad umefaresh davar echad. Each one of them helps to give you information, but also clouds some of the information. Each need each other, because whatever one is sotem, the other one is mefaresh. Whatever the other one is mefaresh, the other one is sotem. So each item has something that's clear and something that's unclear. And the other word helps to define or clarify the item. The Bechor Mashma Afilu Yotzei Dofen. Bechor has a broad enough definition that could even mean Yotzei Dofen. Could even mean a C-section. That's what Peterechem comes to define for you which type of Bechor we're speaking about. Peterechem can also be a broad description, which is Afilu Yatzar Achar Yotzei Dofen. Even if it came after a C-section, it'd also be Peterechem. Bechor Mamayitle. And that's what Bechor does. So Bechor and Peterechem, each one of them has a piece of information that narrows scope, but they also have a piece of information that opens up possibilities. Bechor narrows the scope to firstborn, but on the other hand, it opens up the possibility that it could be, even if it's not Peterechem. Peterechem opens up the possibility of the birth canal even post a C-section. On the other hand, it defines that the birth canal is the defining factor. So between the two of them, on a mutual basis, they each help to define each other. And in defining each other, you get to the first-born child that comes through the birth canal. That's what's going to be Bechor. And in that way, you have a klal tzarich leprat, prat tzarich leklal. Each one of them is helping to define or explain the other one. And that's the example that's brought by the Braita. But then you have the Rabbeinu Tam, as we mentioned before, who says, the Bein Ocho, or Bein Bechulin, have a Klal Uprat Gamur, the Be'alma, because he says that a Klal Uprat and a Klal Tzarich Leprat, it's all the same thing. And even though the Gemara in Chulin explicitly says that it's a Klal Tzarich Leprat, he says that's about something else. That's about a different issue over there, which he's so Be'afar. Be'afar, the bet over there defines it as to be in between the earth. It means you have to have earth underneath it, earth on top of it, in order for it to be kisui adam. And that's what he calls a klal hatzarich leprat. And therefore he is much more circumspect about this distinction that Rashi makes, a semantic difference, not a difference in content. Whether it's explaining or defining the klal uprat or klal hatzarich leprat, they're both the same thing, according to the Rabbeinu Tam. And the Rabbeinu Tam says that our Gemara here is only coming to explain a prat that's a rech leklal ka'ato, but not coming to explain a klal that's a rech leprat, even though it mentions it in the koteret, that's not really what it's after over here. And therefore, the klal uprat that's mentioned here And the Kol HaTzarich LaPrat, there's really no distinction that Rashi's making. Rather, they're just after a Prat, HaTzarich LaKlal, and that is the last line of the Braita, as Rashi explained before, which is a Prat that still needs definition based on the Klal, which is the Peterechem, still needs the Bechor to define what type of Peterechem, or what instance of Peterechem, is considered to be a Bechor. Alright, now the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Shravya Le'abaye, Rav Shravya says about this Braita to Abaye, Reisha loka nosiv la tamuda b'chor. In the Reisha, Reisha is not the first section of the Braita. Reisha means the middle section of the Braita. The Gemara did not bring the word b'chor in order to answer the problem. Alma b'chor the dvar achad, habi b'chor. That means that a b'chor for one item is a definition of b'chor, and b'chor would not have helped you. The Gemara here proposes that you have zachar. Zachar says it's the firstborn male that is chayav in b'chor. Then the Gemara wants to know, the firstborn Zachar, does it mean the first of the male children? Does that mean the first of all the children? The Gemara answers with Peterechem. Answers that it has to be Peterechem. The other possibility of answering would have been to bring the word Bechor again. If you bring the word Bechor, Bechor by definition should be the firstborn child that also is the first one through the birth canal. I mean, it has all of those encompassed or encapsulated in that word. Had the Gemara brought the word Bechor, it should have solved the problem. It didn't do that. It brought the word Peterechem. But the fact that it brought Peterechem and not Bechor tells you that the word Bechor would not have solved the problem. The reason Bechor would not have solved the problem is Bechor means any firstborn. That means whether you're the first of the children, you're the first of the males, you're the first through the Peterechem, it wouldn't have mattered. Any one of those would have sufficed over here. And that means that the word Bechor would have been not a good answer for the problem, because Bechor wouldn't have changed your decision. It wouldn't have given you any more information than you had before, because now you have a Zachar, and that's a firstborn. Be a firstborn because it's the first male, could be the firstborn because it's the first child. Bechor wouldn't have told you anything more than you already know. So that tells you that the word Bechor, by definition, includes the Varachan. Seifa, the latter case, Kanosiv Latamuda Bechor. After it brought the word Peterechem, then it does bring the word Bechor down to tell us that. Alma Bechor ledavar achad, lo avi Bechor. The word there, Bechor, comes to teach you that Peterechem is not enough. Peterechem, you need also firstborn child. That means that the word Bechor over there is telling you need to be a Bechor for everything. But what Rav Shravya is pointing out is that within the Braita, it seems to be that the word Bechor sometimes means this, and sometimes means that. Sometimes the word Bechor seems to mean anything that is first. That's enough to be called a Bechor. And that's why the word Bechor didn't help you out in the middle section of the Braita. Then at the end of the Braita, they bring the word Bechor as if first of everything. And that tells you the answer. So which one is it? Is it Bechor that means everything first? Or is it Bechor that means anything that is first is called a Bechor? And it seems to be there's internal stira in the Braita along the lines of what is the machloka between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. Amalei, so Abaye answers him, the Olam, Bechor ledvar achad, lo avi Bechor. A Bechor for one item is not called a Bechor. Vereisha, then why didn't the Gemara bring the word Bechor after it brought Zachar? When it said Zachar, and now we know it's a male, and we want to know, does it mean the firstborn male? Or does it mean the firstborn child? Why don't you bring the word Bechor, and that would have solved your problem already. Reisha achikamar, Zachar, av kol afilu yotzei dofen. The Gemara is not asking about the Zachar being the firstborn child or the firstborn male. It's asking a totally different question, which is that once you're a Zachar, there's a possibility that you could be a firstborn if you come out as a C-section. Could be that you are a firstborn through the birth canal. And maybe coming out as a C-section would suffice. Tamalomar Peterechem. Peterechem comes to narrow the scope of the Zachar over here. Narrow the scope, not from the perspective of firstborn male or firstborn child. It's coming to define a different problem, which is, what type of firstborn are we looking for? Are we looking for a firstborn, whether it comes out as a C-section or a Peterechem, or is it only becomes through the birth canal? That's what Peterechem comes to deal with. So the Gemara was addressing a different question at this point, and therefore bringing the word Bechor wouldn't have solved your problem. You bring the word Bechor, it doesn't tell you still whether it's through the C-section or the Peterechem. So that's what it brought Peterechem for to deal with. But had it been that it, all it wanted to know was, is it enough to be a Zachar, be the first male and not the firstborn, that you're right, the word b'chor would have solved the problem. But that's not the problem we're after. We're after the problem of what type of birth is called a birth at this point. And that peterechem narrows and b'chor can't do that for you. Ravina amar, the olam b'chor ledvar achad, havi b'chor. So a b'chor for one item is considered to be a b'chor. The seifa halchika amar. This is what the latter part of the b'raita means, because the last section of the b'raita is now problematic. How did it bring the b'chor to tell you that after you have a zachar peterechem, that's only if it's the first child, not if it is the first male through the birth canal, that would not be enough, even if it came after a C-section. So then, we use the word b'chor to solve that problem. It makes it sound like b'chor means you have to be b'chor for everything. So he says, v'seif achimar, isav kadatzka yatza achar yotzei dofen, kadosh, if you think that the one that comes out after a C-section is still called, is kadosh, b'chor dechtim rachman olomali. Then why does the Torah bother to write the word b'chor? If it's coming to exclude a case where a female exited before him, that we already know from peterechem. Peterechem says the first through the birth canal. That means if the male is not the first through the birth canal, it's not going to solve your problem. Ela shmamino b'chor limute eched yotzei achar yotzei dofen. The word b'chor must be coming to tell you that somebody that is born after a C-section is not called a b'chor. So the truth is that the word b'chor itself does not mean b'chor for everything. It means that as long as you're b'chor for something, that's enough. But in our situation, we've already got all the other things. We got zachar, we got peterechem. Well, all we're missing now is it before or after a C-section? And the answer to that question is b'chor. The word b'chor at this point can only teach one additional item, which is that it's got to be the first, the very first. Otherwise, you don't need the word b'chor. If you tell me it's the first through the birth canal, I got that from peterechem. Tell me it has to be the first male, I have that from zachar already. The only thing left to tell me is that this has to be the first born child, even if it came after a C-section. Therefore, the word b'chor over here, even though it has a narrower scope than we thought, it only has to be a b'chor for one thing. In this instance, b'chor only has one thing to deal with. And that is whether, if you came after a C-section, you're still called a b'chor. And that, the word b'chor, comes to teach you, otherwise you don't need it. Without that word, you wouldn't have thought anything otherwise. So this got to bring some additional information. That additional information is the fact that if you come after a C-section, you are not kadosh. Amalei Rav Achami Difti the Ravino. So Rav Achami Difti says to Ravina, based on his explanation over here, Isagadatka b'chor l'dvar achad avi b'chor. According to you, who says that a b'chor for one item is called a b'chor, tinach heched yotza zachar yotzei dofen, zachar derech rechem. Then, for you, the solution to the problem of when you had a male that was born in a C-section, and then a male born through the birth canal, to lo kadosh, that it's not kadosh, derei leida mi b'chor, because that birth was already excluded from the word b'chor. The b'chor, the rachamim, ika. B'chor, the zecharim, leka. Because over there you have the firstborn through the birth canal, but it's not the firstborn of the males. Ela, heicha deyatzta nekeva derech dofen. The other hand, if you had a C-section with a female that's born, v'zachar derech rechem, li kadesh. But the male came through the birth canal, then it should be kadosh. Da'ika, b'chor, the zecharim, u'b'chor, the rechem. Because in that case, you have a b'chor, both the rechem, it's the first born through the birth canal, it's the first male born. So again, I've given definition to all the items that are there, and yet I still have it not being the first child. Because over there, you do get the first born. You do get the word b'chor to solve your problem. You had the word zachar, this is a male. It's the first born male that's coming through the peter rechem, that is a b'chor because there was no male that came before him. Even though there was a female that was born, that female was born through a C-section. If that's the case, then according to your definition, you've narrowed the scope of what is possibly a b'chor, but you didn't eliminate all the possibilities. You're saying, what do I need the word b'chor for? Well, I'm telling you what you need the b'chor for. The word b'chor is coming to tell you in a case where there were two males born, one C-section, one peterechem, that neither of those are b'chorim, because the word b'chor comes to teach me that not only do you have to be the b'chor, that of the peterechem, but you also have to be the firstborn. And over here, this is not the firstborn. On the other hand, when you have a female that was spread out for a C-section first, and then you have a male coming through the birth canal, over there you are a Bechor. You may not be the firstborn child, but you are the firstborn male. And therefore you could give definition to all the words. Sachar, this is a male. Petarechem, it's the first one through the birth canal. Bechor, it is the first male child. That means all three of those words are given definition, and yet still it's coming after a C-section of a female. And it would be called a Bechor according to you. So if you say that Bechor L'dvar Achad is considered a Bechor, then according to you, firstborn male is enough to give definition to the word Bechor. And now I've solved all the words that are there. I've given definition what they add. And yet I still have a possibility then that a male that is born through the birth canal after a female that was in C-section, that would be a Bechor that is Kadosh, which we know is not true. Ella mechavarta kide Abaye. Abaye's explanation is more plausible over here for a number of reasons. Well, first of all, we just showed the problem with the explanation of Ravina. But in addition to that, if you say that the machlok between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah is about whether the definition of the word Bechor is Bechor for everything, or Bechor ledavar echad, or at least Rabbi Tarfon's a suffek, then Abaye, who says that the word Bechor means a Bechor lechol davar, is subscribing to the position of Rabbi Akiva. And Ravina, who's saying that Bechor ledavar echad is considered a Bechor, saying something akin to Rabbi Tarfon. And therefore it makes sense that Abaye's position is going to be correct here, not only because of the deficit we just pointed out in Ravina's explanation, but also because of the fact that Abaye now is subscribing to Rabbi Akiva's view, and that is going to be the view of the halacha. And therefore it makes more sense to have Abaye be the proper explanation over here. Okay, with that we complete the second parak. Now we begin the third parak. Someone who purchases an animal from a non-Jew. You have no clue as to whether the animal has given birth yet or not. You don't know whether this had a child or not. Rabbi Shmuel gives you some tips about how to know if this animal has given birth or not. Eiz bachnata v'dayna kohen. A goat, in its first year of life, if it gives birth, it's for sure to the kohen. Mikan v'elech, safek. Older than that, it's not clear. Rachel Batshtayim, a ewe that is 2 years old, vaday the kohen, definitely goes to the kohen, mikan ve'elech, for there to forward, safek. Paravi chamor benot shalosh. When it comes to a cow and a donkey, then 3 years old is that threshold, so that's vaday the kohen, mikan ve'elech, safek. From there to forward, it is a safek. So now, Rashi says over here, eiz batshnata means, She'alda b'toch shnata. That if it gives birth in its first year of life, that's clearly the Bechor. Because an eiz is not going to give birth twice in its first year of life. So if you now have an eiz bat shnata that's giving birth, in all likelihood that is the firstborn of the animal. Because otherwise it wouldn't be giving birth again in its first year. So that's true at 2 years for you. And at 3 years for a cow or a chamor. Know how old the animals are. They have a good, just by the size, the view, they had a good sense of what the size and the age of the animal is. What they didn't know was whether the animal had given birth or not. And here he's telling you that at certain age thresholds, it's very clear that the animal is giving birth for the first time. Tosfot over here says, Ein nefaresh. Don't explain the Mishnah as the odot tok shtei shanim. That when a parav chamor are 3, don't explain it that they give birth within their 2 years. Elam ita de yalda b'shanashnia lau haita chuzer v'yoledet b'shlishit. Inyan shpeish Rashi b'gemara. As Rashi is going to explain later on in the Gemara. Rashi is saying that if the parah had already given birth in its second year, it wouldn't again give birth in its third year. Afagav de gdola yoledet b'chol shana. Even though when they're larger, they give birth every year. Which means that there is a possibility that the parah would give birth in the second year. It's just that within the third year, it wouldn't give birth again. So if it's getting birth in the third year, it's definitely the firstborn. Not because it can't give birth before that, but if it did give birth before that, it wouldn't have sufficient time to recover and then give birth again in the third year. There's a possibility of pregnancy before that, just that it won't have multiple pregnancies by the time the third year comes around because it doesn't give birth in such close proximity. According to Tosfot, by definition, it's not giving birth before year three, and therefore, if you're in year three, it's definitely the first pregnancy that it had. So if it's pregnant in the third year, it's clearly an indication that it wasn't pregnant before this point in time. Shmamina tovshtayim lo yolda klal, is that the animals of the parot don't give birth whatsoever in their first 2 years of life. Tosafot in the Gemara, Sechet Avodah Zarah, Daf Chav Dalet Amud Bet, notes that we have masim b'chol yom, that our cows are giving birth at 2 years. So Tosafot is bothered by that. He says, the Gemara says, see here, Tosafot concluded, cows don't give birth in the first 2 years. So masim b'chol yom is saying that we have cows that are giving birth in their second year. So there, Tosafot raises his famous comment, which is, nishtanu atevahim. Teva has changed. Obviously, that's a dangerous precedent, because then how do you know anything is still defined the same way? How do you know that anything is still the same as what the Gemara is indicating? But Tosafot uses that in a couple of places in order to deal with what he sees as discrepancies between what Chazal are empirically saying versus what they're seeing in their animals. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, ilu bevlad bilvad habeima nifteret kidvarecha. So Rabbi Akiva responds to Rabbi Shmuel and says, your pointers, your tips are really nice, but that's because you think, or at least what you're suggesting is, the only way to have a bechor is to have a live birth. And that live birth would then only be possible in that year, and then you wouldn't have another birth besides that one birth. Given that, then in the third year for the parah and the chamor, if it gives birth, it's for sure a bechor. For a ewe, it's in the second year, and for an aes, it's in its first year. But, el amru, siman avlad bebeima daka tinuf, ubekasa shilya, ubisha shfir vishilya. You have all of these different possibilities of an indication of a birth, which is what you were asking, a miscarriage. Since a miscarriage would be defined as a bechor, quote unquote, and therefore that which comes afterwards would not be a bechor, then you have a possibility of an animal miscarrying in that year, being pregnant, and giving birth again in that year. Because the first birth wasn't a real birth, it was a miscarriage. Given that, that is the first birth of this year. But it's the first birth of a full live fetus animal that will be viable, but there might have been something that went wrong before, and then even though this animal is the first live born, successful, viable offspring, it's still not a bechor because something happened beforehand that prevents it from being a bechor, including a miscarriage. And those miscarriages are indicated through, for instance, by siman avlad bebeima daka. In the smaller animals, you see tinuf. There is some residual mucus or other things that are there around the birthing canal of the female that indicate that something came out or something was miscarried over here. Ubigasa. And the larger animals, shilya, the placenta or the afterbirth is an indication. Ubisha, and a woman, it's either a shafir or shilya. Shafir is the actual fetal sac with something inside of it, some form inside of it. And the shilya, once again, is the placenta or the afterbirth that comes out. So all of those are an indication of what we call birth. Chachamim here, Mishnayot and Nida, indicate to us that shilya, shafir, are siman vlad. They are an indication of a birth. So even though we don't see a birth here, the fact that these came up are circumstantial evidence, but strong circumstantial evidence that there was a birth that went on over here. It could be a miscarriage. It doesn't have to be a full birth, but it means there was a birth. That miscarriage will disqualify the next animal from being the bechor. Given that, Rabbi Akiva says, all your pointers are nice, but it doesn't help us to know whether this is a firstborn or not a firstborn. Zakal, kol shiyadua shebichra, ain't done the Kohen klum. If we know the animal gave birth, then the Kohen has no rights here. Kol shelo bichra, if it didn't give birth, harizeh the Kohen, then it goes to the Kohen. Bim safek, which is our situation over here, yeachel bimumo, the balin, then it's a motzi mechamero alavaraya. You have to treat it with kedushat bechora, because possibly it is a bechor. But nevertheless, you don't have to give it to the Kohen, because the Kohen can't substantiate his monetary claim over here, because we're just not sure as to whether the animal gave birth or not. So Rabbi Akiva leaves it as a safek. You can't determine just based on the age as to whether this is a firstborn or not a firstborn. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel thinks you can. And according to Rabbi Akiva, it'll be like all the other safekot that we've seen until now. So you treat it with the kedushat bechor, but the Balim get to keep it and eat it b'mumo. Mikan ve'elech, amai safek. Why, from these age thresholds, according to Rabbi Shmuel, beyond those thresholds, does it become a safek? Halech achar rov be'emot. Should go after the majority of animals. Let's say the majority of animals give birth for a A's in their first year, for a U in its second year, and for Parana Chamor in their third year. So now, I'm now in the second year for a goat, I'm in the third year for a U, and a fourth year for a cow or a Chamor. In that instance, Rabbi Shmuel says, Mikan Melech, Safek. Why is it a Safek? Why don't we rely on the fact that the majority of U's give birth in their second year? That means if I'm standing in the third year, I can already assume that this animal that's being born in the third year is not a Bechor or a Bernays. If I'm standing in the second year, I can say the majority of animals give birth in the first year. So in the second year already, there should be Vadai Kulin, because I have a robe, and the robe should be Machriya. Same with the Para and Aton. In the fourth year, I should assume that majority of animals gave birth in the third year. Whatever I have now in the fourth year should not be a Safek, but should be a Vadai Kulin. Since Robe Emot Mitarbo, Yodob Tok Shnatan Ninu, Vavadai Meled Olin, and therefore this animal definitely gave birth. So then why do I have to worry about anything that comes afterwards? Lema Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Meir's feeling. Must be that Rabbi Shmuel subscribes to Rabbi Meir's position, the Chayish Lemiuta, that he worries about minorities. Now again here, it has to be a minority, significant minority. If it's a minority of a minority, then even Rabbi Meir agrees, Miuta, the Miuta, we're not kochesh for. But any other miut where you have a minority that is of some substance to it, then Rabbi Meir is choshesh the miuta. And if you're choshesh the miuta, that'd be the similar sentiment that Rabbi Shmuel is presenting over here, which is, even after the threshold years where the majority of animals give birth, I still have a minority that haven't given birth. And that minority, therefore, is going to skew my view after that point to say there's a safek. It's like a 50-50 shot, not that the robe governs. Afilu teimei Rabbonon. No, Rabbi Shmuel can even hold like the Rabbonon. That robe is machriya. Ki azle bata ruba. When do we go after a robe? Be robe to ita kaman. That's when you have a robe that's in front of you. Kagon. An example of that would be teisha chaniot, the Sanhedrin. Two examples. One is when you have 9 kosher stores and 1 non-kosher store. When you find a piece of meat that is outside of those stores, out on the ground, you can go bata robe. Because in front of us are 10 stores. 9 out of those 10 stores sell kosher meat. I have a robe that is sitting in front of me. Ruba de ita lekaman. And I can be machriya based on that the meat that I'm looking at here is kosher meat. Sanhedrin votes on a case. And they vote 12 to 11. And there is a majority of 1. I have in front of me the 12 and the 11. And I see that it's a majority that's standing in front of me. The majority will govern in that case. And the person will be acquitted if the 12 are the ones that are exonerating him. In a case of Ruba Deleita Kaman, Ruba Deleita Kaman is something that relies on a statistical robe rather than a robe that's in front of us. That's exactly what our Mishnah is speaking about. It's speaking about a statistical robe. We don't have every cow in the world sitting in front of us. We don't have every goat or every sheep sitting in front of us. We know statistically that an A's gives birth in its first year. Statistically, the majority of youths give birth in their second year, and statistically, the majority of parim and kamorim give birth in their third year. That is a statistical robe, or what the Gemara terms as ruba deleita kaman. So he says, what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is that, even according to the Rabbonon, when do we go after robe? That's only when the robe is sitting in front of us. If the robe is not sitting in front of us, then we have a statistical robe. There they would agree that maybe we're choshesh the miut, or the robe isn't sufficiently strong enough for us to use it in order to be machriya in this case. Now, it's interesting because those two types of robe have different strengths and weaknesses to them. Over here you see that the Gemara gives a strength to ruba de ita kaman, which is there, even a small majority is sufficient. As long as you have a majority, any majority would be enough with a ruba de ita kaman, because you're looking at the robe in front of you. Ruba de leita kaman, which is a statistical majority, there you need a higher threshold of robe in order for it to be classified as robe. It's not enough that it's just 51%. It's not enough that's 1 over the edge. It's got to be a robe that really dictates in a major sense. So it's got to be a real rove or a statistically significant rove in order to be a rove. So that's a chumrah about Ruba and Delaita, come on. If you don't have the Ita, come on. Ita, come on. As long as you get over the threshold of 50%, that's a rove and that's enough. That's something that's a kula by Ruba the Ita, come on, and a chumrah by Ruba Delaita, come on. But there's something in the reverse, which is it makes it sound like over here that Ruba the Ita, come on, is a hachra'ah. It's a halachic decision. It's not being koveya actuality. It's not telling us in reality what's happening. It's telling us this is a mechanism for deciding in this situation. So it's not changing the reality in front of us. It's just telling us that now we have to make a decision. This is the mechanism of decision. The other hand, the statistical rove seems to be indicating mitziyut. It's telling us or defining for us what is the reality in these situations. And therefore, there's a kula in the Ruba Deleta Kaman, which is that it defines the mitziyut. It's not just a achra'ah. Again, we're not looking for a mechanism of decision. We're looking for what the reality is, and that will define the reality rather than just being a decision that can technically be overturned. Or do we have to be choshesh then for the miyuta? Do you have to worry about the miyut when mitziyut is then governed by that rove? There you wouldn't have to worry about it. You wouldn't have to think about it. You wouldn't have to worry about the possibility that there's some ulterior item that is pushing against you. On the other hand, if it's achra, then that's a mechanism for decision. If there are other mechanisms for decision that come up that could interfere, then you might have to worry about it. Or, if I had a choice to wait and get the information, maybe I would have to wait and get that information because it's only achra, it's not a mitziyut. So you have different chumrot and kulot with each one of them. Here we happen to be pointing to the chumrah about roba deleta, come on, the statistical rove, which is that you need a higher threshold of rove rather than the ruba deita, come on, where the threshold is right over 50% is enough. Gemara says, wait a minute. Vakatan miktana the ruba deleta, come on. What about a minor, both of male and female minors, who are definitely about statistics, because they're abundant, but the ruba. Over there, they're abundant, still paskin, based on the rove. Tanya brighta in yivamot, katan viktana, lo chotzim, velo miyabmin, divi rabi meir. A katan and a ktana can't do chalitza, they can't do yibum. That is the view of Rabbi Meir. Amrulo yafe amarta she'en chotzin. You're right about chalitza. Ish ktiv v'parsha. The word ish appears in the parsha of Yevama. And therefore, ish means a man. A man can perform chalitza. A minor cannot perform chalitza. As far as minors performing chalitza, you're right. The word ish already tells you that a minor is disqualified. Umakshina nisha l'ish. And then we have a hekesh between man and woman. And therefore, just like a man who's a minor cannot perform a chalitza, so too an isha who is a minor cannot have chalitza performed on her. That would make it that you're right. With regards to chalitza, minors are excluded. The Bali Tosafot over here spend time discussing whether this hekesh is a valid hekesh and whether everybody agrees. He brings from the Yishami that seems to indicate otherwise, that it's a machloket. The Bali Tosafot are not clear as to whether this is just an asmachta, this limud of isha, or is it a real limud? And you would then obviously have two different outcomes as to whether the problem of a woman having chalitza performed upon her, is that only an issue mid Rabbanan? Or is that an issue mid the Uraita? And that's probably supposed to bring both sides to that. Ella, matam, emi abdomen. So but then on the other hand, I understand by chalitza why the minors are disqualified, but by ibum, why are they disqualified? So Amar Lahem, he says back to them, I'll tell you what the problem is. Katan, shemi yimatze tsaris. Because a katan may grow up and be found that he's impotent. And if he's impotent, then there's no mitzvah of Yibum. Because Yibum is all about Yakum Shem Le'achiv. To produce offspring that can then stand in his brother's stead. Tana, Shema Timatzei, Ayalonit. And same thing with a female. She might grow up and be found to be barren, unable to carry children. If that's the case, then in those instances, there's no mitzvah of Yibum. Benitzia, Pogim, Be'ervah. And then you're in violation of Eshadach. The only dispensation to waive Eshadach is in the case where you're performing the mitzvah of Yibum. Well, the mitzvah of Yibum requires the possibility of offspring. Because the whole point of the Yibum is to provide offspring that will stand in place of the brother that had passed away. If you have no possibility of producing offspring, then there's no mitzvah of Yibum. We don't know yet. They're minors. We don't know what their standing is going to be in the future. We don't know whether they're going to be a Saris, whether they're going to be an Ilunit. Because we don't know that information, we're Choshesh. Rabbanon answer, Zil Botar Rov Ketanim. Rov Ketanim, Lav Sarisim Ninu. Zil Botar Rov Ketanot. Rov Ketanot, Lav Ilunot Ninu. Go after the Rov. Over here you have most minors will not turn out to be infinite. Most minors will not turn out to be unable to bear children. So since that's the case, we're going to follow the Rove. Now this is a clear case of statistical Rove. We're not talking about a Rove that's standing in front of us. We're talking about majority of children will be childbearing adults. So if that's the case, then we're talking about Ruba Delay to come on, and yet the Chachamim are following such a Rove. So you see that even in statistical Rove, they don't worry about the minority. It's only Rabbi Meir that's Choshesh Lemiuta in that case that we worry about it. He's worried about the fact that you might have this possibility of a child that will not become a child-bearing adult. In that case, you'll be in violation of Eshedach. Chachamim say we go after the rove. So the Torah Chachamim seem to indicate that the Hachra is equally applicable by Ruba de Ita Kaman and Ruba de Leta Kaman. El Amarova, Mechavarta, it's very clear that Rabbi Shmuel can Rabbi Meir's virile. It's clear that Rabbi Shmuel is subscribing to Rabbi Meir's position. He's not holding like the Chachamim, he's worried like Rabbi Meir about the mute. The Chayish, the Miuta, that they worry about a minority. Again, when it is a minority that is worth worrying about. If it's a minority of a minority, even Rabbi Meir agrees that it's just not significant enough to worry about it. But any other minority that has some significance to it, Rabbi Meir says, we're choshish for that, and Rabbi Shmuel is saying the same thing over here. That's why Rabbi Shmuel in our Mishnah says, after that threshold year, it's still a safek. Even though the robe would have given birth inside that threshold, nevertheless, after that point in time, we're choshesh the miuta, and therefore there's a safek after that point in time as well. And even if you're choshesh the miuta here, according to Rabbi Meir, and you have a chazokah that it hasn't given birth yet, even if you put those two together, it still doesn't override the robe, and therefore you have a 50-50, and a 50-50 is a safek. And that's exactly what Rabbi Shmuel is describing in the Mishnah, that beyond that threshold age, it is a safek. Ravina Amar, Afilu Teima Rabbanon. Ravina says, why do we have to undermine the possibility that Rabbi Shmuel subscribes to the Rabbanon? Kazer Rabbanon Bataruba, Baruba Lo Tali Vamase. They follow a robe when there's no other intervening action that is needed in order to generate the robe. It's a natural robe. So in our instance here, with regards to the children, the robe over there is a statistical robe that requires no intervention, no action to be taken. The natural growth of a child will result in an adult that is childbearing. They don't have to do anything in order to make it that way. They just go about their lives as normal, and they will become childbearing adults. So there's nothing that's to be done. That's not true over here. In our case over here, you do require, what's interesting, as Rashi says over here, kagon ibor behema, pregnancy. Pregnancy does require a interaction between the male and female animals. The tali baharba'a, that is dependent on mating. Ve'ikad ha'mechesh, shem lo ala lehazachar. There is a possibility that it was never mounted by a male, and therefore hilkach safek. There is a safek over here. Rove only works where the rove is an undisputed and natural rove that requires no other action to be taken place to enter us into that world of rove. So yes, if you know the animal was mounted, then maybe you could argue that the rove would govern over here. But we don't know if the animal's mounted. Now you're asking for a trigger. And then after the trigger, the rove kicks in. But how do we know the trigger happened? So you have no idea whether the trigger happened. Since you know whether the trigger happened, the rove can't govern over here. And that's why, in this case, Rabbi Shmuel, even if he subscribes to the Rabbanan, that is Machria, that rove works, even statistical rove works, nevertheless, you still don't know if it was the rove was triggered. Since I don't know that the rove was triggered, I can't follow the rove in this instance. And that would be the view of Rabbi Shmuel. The dissenting view is going to be, it doesn't matter. Even if there is a trigger, this is still the natural way of animals. Most animals will mate. And since most animals will mate, then we can assume that most animals also give birth in that time period. And the rove is still the same type of rove, even though there's quote-unquote a mice in there. The reason being is that it's different than a typical type of mice. A mice, where you require human intervention to trigger the rove, that's different than instinctive behavior of animals. Animals are instinctively mate. You don't have to force animals to mate. Now, you could in order to produce certain items or if you want it to happen on a faster pace. But there is a natural cycle of instinctive behavior in an animal. So to call that a masse, that's what the dissenting opinion is going to say. That's not a masse. That's something that's going to happen. Just like the robe's going to happen, so is mating going to happen. On the other hand, when it comes to human beings, where you require them to take action in order for the robe to be triggered, over there you have thinking individuals who don't instinctively or are not going to necessarily do this. Maybe over there you could argue if there's a mice needed that the robe is automatically kicked in. But that's very different than the case of animals mating, where that's instinctive behavior. It is an action, but it's an action that's going to happen just as naturally as the birthing of a female animal will take place based on the robe. So Tosfot brings just the opposite logic, and he says that mating between human beings is something that happens naturally, doesn't require any outside intervention. On the other hand, sometimes by animals, you need outside intervention to force the mating of the animals and to create the offspring. And therefore, the mating of animals is considered to be more talui b'maseh versus the tashmish of Adam, which is something that is more natural. So Tosfot actually gives the logic just in the opposite direction, suggesting that by animals, it's more likely to be considered a talui b'maseh than the tashmish of Adam. Again, we articulated why you might feel otherwise or have an opposing opinion over here. Okay, we're going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.